Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Welcome to AI Named This Show. I'm Tasia Custodi.
And I'm Tristan Jutra.
And we're your human hosts. Today's episode is all about humanoid robots. Should we be afraid or embrace our AI counterparts? All right, Tristan, first things first, before we begin, I have to give a special shout out to John in Vietnam.
Hi, John.
We got the most lovely email, which also included virtual flowers. Thank you very much, John. So, John, to you I say, ciao. Which,
ciao.
I nailed that. I said it just like an Italian, but it's not Italian. But John, thank you so much. We appreciate you and all of our listeners in Vietnam. Who knew, Tristan?
Worldwide, we're conquering the world along with the AI robot overlords.
It's very true. Now, before we get into that, Tristan, I believe we have a little skosh of follow-up from our last episode where I mentioned Google's newest best take camera feature. Was I duped by Google that this was a new feature?
Well, I mean, when does Google not dupe you, Tasia? I mean, you're so in the bag for them. Just like I'm kind of in the bag for Apple and OpenAI, of course. Well, as it turns out, because tech moves at such breakneck speed and AI even faster, it's so easy for features and innovations to get memory hold, especially when they first appear 10 or 11 years ago. And soon, in the last episode, when we were talking about this feature, you may recall, I was like, I could have sworn I've seen this before, this whole best take feature in the Google Pixel 8. Is it the Pro 8 or is it the Pixel 8 as well?
It's the 8, the line of 8s, and it'll actually be in the Google Photos editing portion of the app.
Do you want to just recap for us what that feature does, and then I'll tell you what I found out?
Yeah, so in a group photo, it will take multiple photos while you're taking a photo. So that way, if somebody's got their eyes closed, or you look weird, or you're looking in the wrong direction, but everybody else looks good, you can essentially swap your own face for a better take, if you will. And you can pick, it'll do it automatically for you, but you can also pick individual from everybody's face in the photo. So I thought this was next level amazing, and Tristan was very quick to correct me that it may not be so new.
Well, it's just because I'm of a certain age. And it's like, and then he's like, was that real? Did I dream that? Well, as it turns out, Nokia had a feature. Remember Nokia?
Yes.
They were making Windows phones for a hot minute. And the Nokia 620, the 925, and the 1020, this yellow gem right here, had a very similar face swapping feature. But it turns out that they weren't the only ones. But wait, there's more. Because friend of the show, a listener, Adam, who I know from the olden days, from the mid to late aughts, we both worked at a company that was making software for Research in Motion, the maker of BlackBerry devices. Remember those? So they also had a feature called Time Warp. And it was very similar kind of idea. So Nokia had this feature late 2012, early 2013 with their Lumia phones. And then in early 2012, the spring of 2012, Research in Motion was premiering BlackBerry OS 10. And this feature they called Time Warp, which is pretty much the same thing. Well, as it turns out, Time Warp is based on a technology by a company called Scalado, and they had something called Scalado Rewind, which, again, it's the same whole thing. So Scalado had this software. So as it turns out, what BlackBerry licensed the software from Scalado, and then a few months later, Nokia bought Scalado. So we're kind of like both right. So Nokia did have that feature, but BlackBerry had announced it as a consumer-facing feature first, and then BlackBerry didn't really have all that much life left in them beyond BlackBerry 10. They eventually started making Android devices and so on. But anyway, just to put a bow on that little thing, we're not going crazy after all, or we might be, but not for this reason. And this everything old is new again. So the difference being that Google has, you know, just touted their AI prowess, which of course they have. But it's kind of interesting. And that's the thing is you can look to the past for features that were kind of maybe half-baked and improve on them with current technology. And there's all sorts of quote-unquote innovation to be had by doing just that. Sometimes it's too early. Sometimes the tech isn't quite there. Just look to the past to see what's coming in the future.
Well, Apple's next. I'm waiting for them to whatever. I wonder what they'll call it.
Magic. Something magic.
Magic face.
Magic face.
Face magic.
Magic time with face. So that's our follow-up for today, Tasia.
Well, I still want to touch on some other news before we get into exciting humanoid announcements that I've been waiting for, Tristan. But we, you know, can't have a show without me talking about Google all the time, I guess. Could we? So this one's really cool, though, is that Google has announced new generative AI search capabilities for doctors. So Google Cloud recently announced new artificial intelligence powered search capabilities that it said will help healthcare workers quickly pull accurate clinical information from different types of medical records. So this search tool is going to allow doctors to pull information from, say, clinical notes, scanned documents, different electronic health records, so it can all be accessed in one place. Heck yes. You can imagine how this is expected to save healthcare workers a ton of time. So as a quick example for you, if a doctor wants to know about a patient's history, they don't actually need to read through all of the notes and faxes and electronic health records all separately now. Instead, they could search questions like, what medications has this patient taken in the last 12 months and things like that. And then they'd see that relevant information all in one place. Plus, these new search capabilities can also be used for other crucial applications like, say, applying the correct billing codes and determining whether patients meet criteria to maybe become part of a clinical trial. So there's a lot of different applications for this right now. And in case you're wondering, yes, this will cite and link to the original source of the information, which will only come directly from an organization's own internal data. So if clinicians have concerns that this AI might be generating inaccurate responses, that should hopefully ease some of those concerns. So say you're like the Mayo Clinic, as an example, it's pulling data from their database. It's not searching from outside sources. So these new features will be offered to health and life sciences organizations through Google's Vertex AI search platform, which companies and other industries can already use to conduct searches across public websites and documents and other databases. Now, this specific offering for healthcare builds on Google's existing healthcare API and healthcare data engine products. I, for one, am very excited to see where Google is going in the health industry as a whole. I don't know if I brought it up to you the other day, but the new Pixel 8 Pro has a temperature sensor on it. And I know everyone's like, why are they put? This is so weird. Like, they just kind of mentioned this. To me, it's where it can go. They've applied to the FDA for approval in use on humans, that it will do more than just temperature, like surface temperature settings. So we want to talk about our actual internal temperatures. So I'm just kind of more exciting looking at all of these things as where Google's going to go in the future with our health, which I just love. Save time for everybody, increase accuracy, hopefully reduce mistakes, by the way, which they didn't, obviously they're probably not mentioning that for a reason, but
CYA.
Doctors are rushed. There's a lot going on in emergency departments. Can you imagine if you have a database at your fingertips in one central location and they can know accurately, like, what type of medication is this patient on before we do something that's going to, you know, have a detrimental effect to them. So I'm pretty excited to see where they're going. Initial stages.
Yeah. There's a few different benefits that one can think of. I mean, with an industry like healthcare, there is so much data being created all the time. Think of all the tests one has, be they blood tests or otherwise, you know, looking at scans, and all that data has to go somewhere. And lots of strides have been made over the last decade for digitizing those health records. So now we have EHS, the electronic health records, which is great. But then it's a question of, what do you do with all that data? And so if we can use some of these AI tools like Vertex AI to help sift through that, and so you're not spending tons and tons of time like looking for stuff, if you can get the AI to, you know, find the, you know, information for you or summarize the information in a way that's accurate. But again, this is mission critical stuff. So there are potential liability concerns, legal issues and whatnot. So Google's going to really want to make sure that they've got this buttoned up. And lots of green field in healthcare. Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, has mentioned, like in an interview probably almost a decade ago now, he said he thought that some of Apple's greatest contributions were going to be in healthcare. And we've seen what they've been doing with Apple Watch and, you know, the health app and all those sorts of things. So both Google and Apple and others are really exploring the space because there are literally trillions of dollars at stake there. And you even think about other fields like law enforcement. How much time is being spent like writing up reports and just doing administration and data, you know, management, all that sort of thing. So again, it's early days, but we have to be careful so that the AI tools aren't hallucinating. Like we've seen things like ChatGPT too, and just making up results when it can't find things. So there's some really, really important guardrails that need to be in place there. But there's some other news this week as well. Speaking of guardrails, Adobe has released Firefly 2. They've updated their generative AI model for Photoshop and for Adobe Illustrator. So not just for rasterized or pixelated images, but also for vector graphics images like you find in Adobe Illustrator. And this is, you know, sort of playing in the same space as things like DALL-E, for example, from OpenAI. And at Adobe Max, Adobe unveiled the Firefly 2 image model, and they say that it generates significantly higher quality images compared to the first version, particularly regarding high frequency details like foliage, skin texture, hair, hands, and facial features when rendering photorealistic humans. The images are generated using the Firefly Image 2 model. They have a higher resolution and have more vivid colors and color contrast. It's like they're advertising OLED TV sets or something here. They've got a prompt guidance feature, and that's really important because sometimes people don't know exactly what to type in to get the best results. And we've seen with the latest version of the Bing image generator that they're looking more to natural language prompts as opposed to all sorts of obscure parameters that some of the tools like Midjourney have required in order to get the best results. Adobe's also working to ensure that the generative match feature that they've introduced, which you can influence the style using specific images, they're making sure it doesn't get abused and that you have to limit or you have to agree to their terms of service and make sure that there's a certain amount of accountability with, you know, Adobe and your usage and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be in beta. It's going to be rolling out to users and won't be available for commercial purposes at this time. So it'll be coming soon to Creative Cloud apps. So it's pretty exciting getting these sorts of tools into people's hands, and the sorts of results that they're seeing are, you know, kind of incremental upgrades from previous generations. One of the examples they showed was a woman emerges from an explosion of marshmallows. You see, there's the woman herself is more it's a more photorealistic woman. The marshmallows have more details, like the wrinkles and the marshmallows that you often see. They also showed in the generative match whereby you can, you know, ask for, say, like an image of a sloth, but combine it with the style from another image, and that could be imagery from your own branding, for example, whether it's personal branding, and when they allow you, corporate branding, to maybe integrate elements of, say, a logo or something like that in there. Now, with all these sorts of generative AI tools coming out, just as a quick little postscript, there is also a symbol that Adobe created to encourage the tagging of AI-generated content. And for some mysterious reason, the symbol is CR. You'd think it would be like AI or something like that. We talked about it on one of our other shows, Momentous Live. But Adobe calls this an icon of transparency, and it's all part of the Coalition for Content, Provenance, and Authenticity, the C2PA group. And they're using CR for credentials. They didn't want to use like something like CC, which, you know, we could get confused with something like Creative Commons. So I don't know. I think a lot of people are going to see that logo and not have any idea what CR means, quite frankly. But I guess it's a step in the right direction for transparency? Question mark.
I guess really all Adobe had to do here when they announced like Firefly 2 was say, "Better hands and teeth," and we all would have been in. Now with better hands and teeth.
I can't wait till better hands and teeth come to our robot overlords, quite frankly.
Man, we really mistitled this episode. It should have been better hands and teeth.
There's still time.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
It is officially time, the moment we have been waiting for, Tristan, for us to meet our AI overlords. Toyota says its new AI robot can master complex tasks in mere hours.
So this is a physical robot, not just like a chatbot.
Correct. This is a physical robot.
In the flesh?
Question. I know, I was just going to say flesh. So engineers working with Toyota, MIT, and Columbia Engineering have pretty successfully shown that the robots they've been training can learn how to do complex tasks like, say, cutting vegetables, spreading peanut butter over a piece of toast, maybe whisking eggs. It's all kind of really kitcheny tasks, but it can do this it can learn in a matter of hours. And don't worry, they're not training these robots to have an uprising, at least
in the
as
kitchen
of yet. Kitchen, right? Uprising. I mean, we are training them with kitchen utensils. We might not have wanted to do anything with knives, but anyhow.
Season 3 on the bear.
Exactly. So you and I might find tasks like this pretty mundane, if you will, like cool, putting peanut butter on toast. But here is why this is exciting. Robots don't have instincts, so to speak, like you or I, to just know generally, like, let me spread this peanut butter over this tiny piece of toast. So to be able to teach a robot to do these tasks autonomously is kind of wild. So what I mean by that is typically robots have to be taught how to do these complex tasks repeatedly until they're able to do them on their own. And in this case, Toyota's AI robot was able to complete several complex tasks after being shown how to do so by humans and then running simulations for just a few hours. So normally this kind of progress would take, geez, anywhere from like days, weeks, even months maybe. And to me, the coolest thing about this is that there's so many companies, like most of these companies train their AI systems using virtual reality kind of systems. But this is human to robot training.
But in this case, it looks like that they actually have a human use their hands, like they're actually guiding the robot initially. So I'm not sure if it's just the robot can just watch them. They're actually the human's actually controlling them the first go. But I think the observing will be the next step, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. So, yes.
Because they have these things where you put your hands into and you do all the and the robots go, oh, okay, kind of like that. But they don't get it perfect the first time.
No, and this is kind of the first instance we're seeing where they're learning these autonomous skills really quickly. Like they're just shown this thing once and then they're like, oh, let me recreate these movements, which is really kind of mind blowing. Because if this is as successful as it's looking like it is, it's a massive stride forward and could change the way that AI robots are even trained going forward. So it's pretty wild stuff. We need to link to some of these articles. Because it's like, you know, I mean, right now you wouldn't want to rely on it flipping your pancake. It's a bit slow going, but it can flip the pancake.
Well, I, for one, welcome our new pancake flipping AI humanoid robot overlords. That really rolls off the tongue.
That's really just an eloquent way of saying it. But can we talk about another robot that's been on my mind a little bit lately, Tristan? It's one that I affectionately refer to as TeslaBot, and... Weren't we all really embarrassed when we first saw TeslaBot?
with the person dressed up as a robot, doing a little robot dancing on stage with Elon Musk last year?
I don't know if everybody remembers that, but let's just take a moment to bless that moment for, you know, when you feel awkward for someone else? That was that moment.
Yeah, that was it met with a lot of scorn back when they first announced that they were working on this. And like, obviously, they didn't have anything to share quite yet at that point. But they've come a long way. This is just the first salvo, I suppose. They showed some more progress earlier this year. Working at Tesla, have recently released a new update on Optimus with a video showcasing the ability of the robot to sort objects autonomously. So in this video, they have a number of blue and green, look like large Lego pieces, and it is sorting them into their individual bins. And even doing things like exhibiting corrective behavior, and when one of these little Lego things is on its side, it'll grab it and make it upright as well. Then it can do things like desorting the blocks back into where it found them originally. So this seems very simple. It's like, well, what do we need a robot to sort blocks for, right? Like that seems pretty basic, but this is just the beginning. One of the things that they're looking at is, you know, how can these sorts of humanoid robots be used in, say, like a warehouse sort of setting?
And other commercial uses, too.
Yeah.
Because the thing with Optimus or TeslaBot, whatever you want to call it, is like, we all laughed at first. It was super embarrassing. But this is, it's a full humanoid. It's not like a robotic arm. It's not like a piece of it. You know, when we think of robotics, it's a head to toe humanoid that now, even in some of the video they've put out, it can do some yoga poses, which again, to us, we're like, I guess, cool. We don't need a robot that can do that, but that's not the point. The point is to show us the progress of how these robots are advancing very quickly and they're able to do these autonomous tasks. So like the thing with the block seems really basic, but it's not, again, for somebody that does not have like inference like you and I to say, like, first of all, it's deciphering colors. If it's like working with a human counterpart, if the human counterpart puts the wrong color in the wrong tray, Optimus takes out the block from the incorrect tray and puts it in the correct tray. So it's deciphering color, it's deciphering shape, it's deciphering if it's, like you said, turned on its side or upright. So it is all these little nuances that I think get me excited when we're talking about, you know, we look at these tasks like, cool, it looks like a basic task. No, to me, it's so exciting in the nuances.
And the fluidity of the movements, too, when you see, like, it looks very human-like. And actually, one of the things that Tesla has said is that this is all happening with end-to-end neural nets. So it's basically emulating the way the human brain works. There's not a whole ton of, pre-training necessarily. There is a bit of reinforcement. There's some interaction with humans there, but it's all onboard neural nets. And the whole idea of neural nets is to, you know, act like a brain. And we've seen, even with like large language models, some people dismiss them. It's like, oh, well, they're just probability engines. Well, you know, our brains are kind of probability engines in a way as well. So these things are not entirely dissimilar. So I think Elon Musk is kind of reveling in the role of being the underdog in this space, because there has been a lot of work done for, you know, 10 or 20 years by the likes of Boston Dynamics and others, the Toyota that we've just talked about. You know, a lot of robotic work has been done in automotive manufacturing. So I think Tesla sees an opportunity to jump in there, use a lot of their existing AI prowess. They've got a Dojo supercomputer that they've been working on as well. Lots of AI going into the vehicles, so the Tesla cars. And like the Tesla vehicles, Optimus is camera only. There are no LiDAR, radar, anything like that. And Tesla made the controversial decision a few years ago to go camera only, whereas others were using more sensor fusion and blending different kinds of sensors like cameras, LiDAR, radar, and so on. But the argument on different Tesla's part, well, one, there was the cost argument, and two, there was like humans learn and see using our eyes. Cameras are the closest things to eyes, so maybe that should be good enough. So very interesting. They're making a lot of progress in a very short amount of time. Of course, they're standing on the shoulders of giants. They've got a lot of internal expertise that they're able to translate into this this new sort of field for them. And maybe we'll have Optimus working on Mars for us sooner than we think.
Well, so far there is no time limit on when we're going to get, nor timeline, sorry, when we're going to get Optimus for mass commercial use. But Tristan, I'm not sure if you're aware, I would like you to meet Aura, the Las Vegas Sphere's humanoid robots that are designed to help guests. So first I want to just back up a hair, because recently I'm sure you've seen a ton of videos from the outside to the interior, but it's got 1.2 million LED screens. It is the largest spherical structure in the world, measuring about 516 feet tall and 516 feet wide and 366 feet tall. So the MSG Sphere has a wraparound 16K screen. 16K, Tristan, that's 160,000 square feet, making it the largest high-definition LED screen in the world. So those lights are the size of hockey pucks, to put it in like a good
preference. A term that you can understand?
In a term that I can understand. This, I mean, Las Vegas, baby. It's like, go big or go home. So I'm sure you've seen a lot of the cool videos floating around of like the exterior of the Sphere. Now U2 is doing their short little residency there. They're the first group to do a residency there. I think it seats about 18,000, but you might have also seen the videos of recent U2 shows. So the inside of the Sphere looks honestly maybe even more impressive than the outside. It makes you feel like you're fully immersed in the experience. It's really kind of wild. But I'm not actually here to tell you about all of that. Just wanted to say it for you. We have to talk about MSG Sphere announcing 5 humanoid robots that will permanently reside within its walls. So there's 5 Aura robots that are going to be located in the venue's grand atrium to greet guests as they enter, and they're going to be available to answer guest questions. So they're saying these robots will act as, quote, spokesbots. And They're supposed to maintain lifelike facial expressions and mobility. Aura has voice storing recognition as well and will be able to focus on one person speaking directly in front of, I'm going to say, her at all times if there's multiple people present. So you can imagine that's important because you're in a grand atrium of a big sphere. Things are probably going to get loud. It's going to be able to focus if it's just you asking that question. And of course, Aura is going to use artificial intelligence to advance as she learns more about us mere humans through her guest interactions. So they do say, at least as of right now, human lab technicians will accompany the robots as they aim to help maximize the sphere's guest experience. I love that job title of a human lab tech. I mean, what a fun gig that would be to like walk around with these Aura robots inside the sphere. So we have neighbors across the street that are going to the U2 show. I have given them strict orders, Tristan, to report back, take video, not just of the immersive experience inside, because it's supposed to be cool sound tech that's going on. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff going on based on your seat and your preferences and a lot of wild stuff. But they're under strict orders to try to meet Aura, see how Aura does. If all else fails, I'm going to Vegas in November and I'm on it, Tristan. Don't you worry. I will report back. I'm heading to the front lines. I'm going to find me Aura.
Well, if you've seen any of the previous videos online of Aura, you talk about its focus on you and its movement in the eyes and the face. And it is a little bit unnerving. It really makes you feel that there's something going on inside there.
You're like, so, who's in there? Who's in there listening to me? looks like that.
And just before we get any angry emails saying that, I've been dissing Tasia, talking about, she can understand hockey pucks. That's because Tasia is the number one Montreal Canadiens fan out there. So that was
Vive le Canadien.
That was a gentle jab, not anything else. So Will you be seeing a hockey game when you're in Vegas, Tasia?
I wish. I'm there to work. That is a bucket list for me to see, even though I'm angry about the Knights. I don't like their name. I don't like that they won the cup.
Don't like that they're using the 80s Vancouver Canucks colors or correct. The Team Germany colors.
Correct. I'm angry about a lot of things, but the atmosphere does seem completely bonkers Vegas style wild. It is a bucket list to do. I won't have time this trip. Listen, you got to break it down, Tristan. I can either do Aura or I can try to do something else. I feel like going to the Sphere and trying to find Aura is a bit more manageable on a work trip than catching a hockey game, unfortunately. And I would never cancel you.
Well, you get double points if you manage to kidnap an Aura and get her on the show.
She thinks she'll fit in my checked luggage on the way back. Like, what are you carrying? Nothing. Nothing to see here.
It's like a scene from the season one of The Americans when they're like having to break the...
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Legs of an unfortunate lady of the evening and cram her into a suitcase.
Just me and my humanoid, just like, taking a flight.
Do they feel pain?
What if she said, ow, you're hurting me?
Oh, no. So if you're interested in learning more about AI-powered robots, humanoid and otherwise. We just want to leave you with a link in the show notes, too. There's a great interview from earlier this year on the Lex Friedman podcast, where he interviews the CEO of Boston Dynamics. His name is Robert Plater, and they talk all about humanoid and other various legged robots. The Atlas was the humanoid robot that got a lot of play online for doing backflips and all sorts of acrobatics. There was also Spot, the terrifying robot dog that they eventually added an arm to his head to be able to do things like open doorknobs, but open doors. So it's worth a listen or a watch. We'll have a link to the YouTube post there, but there's also, you can find the Lex Friedman podcast on all your podcast players of choice.
I'm not afraid yet.
Yet. Well, thank you for all of you for tuning into AI Name the Show. We're still new, so we'd love your feedback. You can email feedback@AINameTheShow.com, and you can find AI Name the Show anywhere you get your podcasts. So be sure to give us a follow and share this episode, and of course, leave us a review. How many stars, Tasia?
5 stars preferred.
We're also on all the socials. We are at AI Name the Show on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, which we still have to build out, and the platform formerly known as Twitter, and more. Thank you so much for joining us.
AI, and goodbye. I'm so excited that I got to say it this time.
You did very well.
Nailed it.